Financial technology, or fintech, is one of the fastest growing industries in the world today, with New York, London, Tel Aviv, Edinburgh, Singapore, Moscow, and other major cities all vying for a piece of the action. Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first dedicated radio show that focuses on how this new boom is changing everything, from the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Now, here's your host, Brett King.
Welcome to Breaking Banks, the number one global fintech radio show and podcast with over 6.5 million unique listeners in 180 countries. I'm Jason Henricks. Today's show is about connecting with customers. When we meet with banks, we frequently ask, what is their unique competitive advantage? By far, the most popular answer is our relationship with our customers. Market Force Information published a study in the Financial Brand earlier this year that showed 57% of Americans are satisfied with their financial institution. While that is a 7-point jump over the previous year, it isn't really a reason to celebrate. That means 43% aren't happy, and the study found double digits of customers already looking to switch. Often, the stickiest part of the relationship is the fact that it's really difficult to change your bank, especially in the United States. In the first segment, I'll be talking with Ali Lefevre, co-founder of The Obedient Agency, which specializes in humor marketing, to talk about the challenges of building emotional connections. In the second half, Nick Kopp, U.S. CEO of online banking juggernaut N26 out of Germany, and I will talk about the future of mobile-first banking and how do you build a relationship when you won't necessarily ever meet that customer face-to-face. The Mobile Payments Conference is in Chicago, August 26th to the 28th, with a great lineup of commerce and payments experts ranging from Google and Pinterest to Venmo and PayFi. Use the code MPC19BB50 for $50 off. If you're looking for ways to create new sources of value for your bank or credit union, or if you've been tasked with building or managing an innovation team within your org, you really need to attend the BAI Innovation Summit, October 8th through 10th in Boston. JP and I will be conducting an interactive, hands-on session that will take you through an empirical approach to creating value. It's not about chasing shiny new technologies. It really is about how do we generate that return on investment. We start with a series of strategic frameworks and lenses to help you put your highly innovative ideas aligned against your strategic priorities. The result is a portfolio approach that balances the need for incremental improvement with new sources of growth and learning. You can learn more at BAI.org and save $300 if you use the code S19. That's Sierra 19. Solstice Forward 19 is October 16th, also in Chicago. It is a full-day interactive summit with revealing explorations of bold and innovative ideas in immersive emerging tech. The world has long been filled with breakthroughs, many of which we take for granted today. Go to solstice.com/forward19 and use the code FINTEX, F-I-N-T-E-X, for 50% off. And now our first guest, here with Ali Lefevre, the co-founder and managing director of the Obedient Agency, a agency that is focused on humor marketing. Now, I've got to be honest, this seems like a very narrow niche to go after humor marketing. Mm-hmm. So why that area of focus?
Yeah, well, you know, I think what really drew us to humor is when we think of humor, we think of a really broad range of tones and tactics and styles in order to approach branding and marketing. And so what we just found is that generating a positive response from your audience and making them feel good and making them laugh is so effective, and it really helps to build consumer loyalty, and that is why we chose that approach, is that it feels good from an internal perspective, is to use humor and fun and positivity. It feels good from a consumer, and it feels good for brands to really approach their brand in that way. And it is very specialized, it is very unique, it's very difficult to do, and if you can do it right, which is what we think we can do, it usually can be a huge hit. And so we decided to specialize because it's a very different and also effective approach to branding and marketing.
You certainly stand out. Can you give a couple examples of some of the favorite work that either you've done or where you think there's been really good use of humor?
Yeah. Well, so in terms of one of the projects we've just wrapped up, so we actually worked with an almond milk company that we just wrapped a project on, which is very fun. So basically they are the first to market almond nut concentrate, where you can take this tub of nut base concentrate and you can make your own almond milk at home.
Yep.
So we went really hard in the paint with them. They really wanted to have a very fun, playful, outrageous tone. They wanted to endear their audience. They wanted to really engage their consumers and find that, how do you tell them about this kind of new product that they might not be familiar with, and teach them about it in a way that is engaging, enticing, exciting, and fresh and memorable. And so
most people don't stop and go, oh, a nut-based milk alternative. That is fun and engaging.
Right?
It just doesn't spring out that way. Although I do want to say, I know the name of the company you're talking about.
Yes.
It's a family-friendly show.
Yes. So I will not use one of our more outrageous like taglines or campaigns we did for them. But for example, like even something very subtle is the alternative to alternative milks, because the whole premise with this company is that they are better than the nut milk you can make at home, because you don't lose all of the nutrients and vitamins and minerals through the process of making it. And it's less messy. And then it's better than the stuff you find in the stores, because it doesn't have any of the additives or any of the chemicals or any of the extra stuff that just kind of ruins the taste profile, and also doesn't make it as healthy as it could be. And so, their tagline became the alternative to alternative milks, which doesn't sound very funny, but when we say fun and funny and humorous, we think, you know, what is compelling, what is interesting, what is engaging, what is surprising, what is delightful, different, all of those things. And so that was kind of one idea we came up with them. I'll leave some of the other ones out of this topic, out of this conversation.
Knowing, you know, some of your work that came out of it, not knowing that you had worked with this company, I will say it is definitely funny. Definitely pushes some of the edges, but that is what makes it fun and memorable.
Yes.
And engaging. And I guess it begs the question, do you think banks should be funny?
Well, I think that there is an opportunity for banks to develop real customer relationships. And I think in order to do that, coming onto the market with a very well-defined personality and a really strong position, and being able to engage with your consumers like a human and be relatable and be authentic and have integrity and have honest conversations and be more likable and have your content be palatable and digestible and engaging, I think there's room for all of that. Funny for the sake of funny, I think it never works no matter what industry you're in. It always has to be approached with a really strong understanding of your industry, your competitive landscape, what are your audience needs and desires and wants and fears, and then developing your approach from that place. So yes, I think there is room to do all of those things, but done in a very tactful, responsible, educated way.
Yeah. You know, in April, Chase tried to be funny on their Twitter account by doing a Q&A between a consumer and their supposed bank account. And the consumer posed the question, why is my balance so low? To which the account responded with some financial advice, doing the, forgo the latte, don't take a Lyft, walk. And it ends with the consumer saying, I guess you'll never know. And the Twitterverse, of course, exploded. They did not find it funny. They had, political candidates responding that this is poor shaming and things like this. Where did Chase go wrong? Because the advice itself, is sound, that if you want to save money, foregoing some of these things is a way to, begin to build your bank balance. What do you think went off the rails there?
Yeah, well, I think first of all, the first thing I would say is there is a real lack of awareness of just their own perception, and also the awareness of their customers' wants, desires, experiences, needs, perceptions of them. So I think that they lack self-awareness. I think they lacked any sort of empathy in their approach. They didn't frame it as a campaign on learning to save money. They didn't frame it as helpful tips and tricks. They weren't, developing some sort of Twitter campaign in order to meet the needs of their community. I think it just came off as very flippant and ignorant to the truths and experiences of who they were trying to attract. So I think that, and also a snarky tone is a very, which is what I perceive is what they took, is a very tough tone to take, especially in just in general, but also in that type of industry, in a banking industry, financial institution. I think that's a really tough sell, because to me, the goal would be to build trust, to build, you know, some sort of, you know, you're bridging a gap in terms of education and understanding and people's, you know, varying experiences and their relationship to money and all those things that can be very sticky territory. Snark is not necessarily, does not necessarily lend itself to that type of relationship building.
Yeah, interesting. So when you, like your depth around tone, mm-hmm. how does a bank go about figuring out what tone it should employ? And should different banks have different tones?
Yeah, I mean, when we are, you know, developing our personality for any brand we work with, and we're doing a lot of different things, we're really digging into what we call the, you know, the brand's promise. So what can you do that no one else in your industry can do? What is your promise that you can live up to as an industry leader? What makes you unique, different, memorable, approachable, all of those things? And then once we start to understand that, is how do we shape a personality around that? And you can't really develop a personality until you really understand what you stand for and what you're all about and what do you want to be known for, what's your stake in the ground. But also is really understanding your audience. You know, what do you want to evoke from them? What do you want to extract from them? What emotions do you want to rise to the surface when they engage with you? So I think it's really important for you to know the things that you want to draw out in your consumer. Do you want them to trust you? Do you want them to see you as relatable? Do you want them to feel like you are an aspirational brand, an inspirational brand? Do you want them to feel excited about you? Do you want them to talk about you and share about you, which means you might take a little bit edgier of a tone if you want to be, you know, really at the cutting edge and forefront of their minds and be so surprising and so unexpected, right? So, but basically really understanding, like, what do you want to communicate to them and what do you want to draw out from an emotional perspective? And that's how you start to develop tone. So I think that, you know, there isn't one right tone for every industry or every business within an industry. It can really flex and vary, but it has to be a consistent experience. It has to be a well-educated experience, has to be well-defined, cohesive, and it has to be rooted in something really with a deep understanding and who you're trying to speak to. And I think that is where often companies miss the mark, is they try to do it from a very surface level place and forget that it's not jokes and humor and fun and funny for the sake of that only generally don't work and don't land.
How do you start to understand where your customers are coming from that tone? Like, how do you go about that discovery process? And I think one of the challenges, well, two of the challenges in banking. One is we have so many different types of customers, and you talked about consistency. So how do you develop a tone that can almost be universal? And yeah, dig into that first, and then I have a second question for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think it comes from having a deep understanding of your audience, right? So it is a lot of data collection. It is a lot of gathering qualitative experiences from your variety of consumers. And I think you can start with a centralized tone. So when we're looking at an industry and we know we're going to speak to a lot of different types of people within that industry. So what we start to do is, okay, we have a centralized tone. So this is something that's generally not just palatable to everyone, but it's approachable to everyone. It makes sense to the broader audience. People can relate to it more broadly. And then you flex in different arenas, right? You might have, you know, specific campaigns where you're targeting specific consumers. You might have a variety of ads. You might flex your voice a little bit on social media and a little bit differently on an email campaign, for example, because you know you have a different demographic or type of consumer that's you're generally interacting with on those mediums. And so it doesn't mean you can I think the biggest thing is that you have to have a very thorough understanding, and then you have to play in different platforms and know that you may not land with everyone everywhere. And that's always a risk of having a more customized, unique, personable brand, right? And really infusing personality into your branding. But I think the beauty of that is you start to really build strong customer relationships, because people start to know you and like you and trust you and understand you and start to get who you are. Especially what I mean by a consistent experience is if they recognize, oh, there's going to be an authentic tone everywhere, and they're going to have personality everywhere, that tone can flex in a variety of places and still work for mass consumers.
So authenticity is thrown around so much right now within the branding circles. How do you develop authenticity? Like, what's the litmus test for authenticity and how do you infuse that?
Well, my personal take is I don't actually love the term authenticity. I tend to use it because people are very familiar with it. But when we are thinking of brands, we kind of throw that term out. And the term I like is integrity. I think authenticity generally to me is a very self-serving experience. It's like, what is authentic to me? And integrity to me is it plays in both camps. So what is integral to me as a brand or to how we see ourselves as a brand and also to our consumer experience. So how do they have an integral experience with us as a brand? So they who we say we are is who we are. What we promise is what we deliver. How we show up in one place is how we show up in another. And to me, there's more of a consistent value and morality and belief system that runs through integrity than runs through authenticity. I mean, you can be authentically an a-hole everywhere and that feels authentic, right? And but that to me doesn't mean that that's good practice or makes you well received by your customers or that you're even keeping them in mind when you're trying to develop your authentic brand.
You obviously consume some financial services in both your personal and business life. Mm-hmm. As you look at the financial service landscape, who do you think is doing a good job at this integrity piece of it? And the following question is, do you think there are any banks out there that are using humor in a very powerful way to build that connectivity?
Honestly, I haven't seen a banking institution or a financial institution maybe consistently use it really well. I've seen some banks will, over the years have done blitz campaigns. They tend to be pretty watered down.
That's called the compliance department got a hold of it. They probably started one place and then, somewhere along the lines, you talked about, being human and relatable. Compliance does not always believe that we need to be human and relatable. We need to actually be buttoned up that we can't be held accountable to the regulators.
So by the time it hits the masses, I don't think I've seen anything that's made me go, wow, that really jumps out and stands out to me as something that I really locked in and remember them or like I understood what they stood for. They seem really different than everyone else in their industry. I think I'm yet to see a bank really understand the customer's perceptions and then be able to empathize with that and then turn that into a very relatable, interesting, fresh, engaging campaign. So, how do we approach customer truths or truths about the financial industry in a way that people can go, oh yeah, they have self-awareness, they understand themselves, they kind of get why we're maybe skeptical or why there may be some trust lacking there. I mean, personally, I've been a Chase customer for a long time. I've always had a very good internal experience with them, just with my local branches and branch managers, but I don't really have a perception of them in terms of how they show up in the, across the advertising space. They don't really jump out to me. They just happen to be the big bank in Chicago that I utilized for many years and have had a good experience with.
Well, and I will say, I think Capital One and ING have both done a good job. And even in the merger there, that they've kept a consistent voice. I like that, when you log in, it says, hello, saver, if you're getting into the money market, which is different than others. Although hands down, the funniest bank out there has got to be Redneck Bank. Have you heard of this?
No, I have not.
All right, listeners, everyone go to Redneck Bank now. Unfortunately, we'll be bringing down their site. It's focused on the rural market, and their tagline is, banking is funner here. And they just play into this perception that, the farmers are, redneck in what they do because they serve largely the agricultural market. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's everything down to their mascot, not a logo, is like the donkey. And everything is written in redneck. Like, I have no idea where they found their compliance person. Yeah. But man, she or he must be phenomenally patient in how they deal with the regulators. But I think that speaks to the authenticity part that you talked about, that if you are someone that self-identifies as redneck, which is probably not for everyone, even if you, you know, are from a farm like I am, you're not going to identify that with that, but you have to be, it seems part of what you're saying is you have to be okay with not everyone is going to love everything you do.
Yeah, I actually commend them, you know, without being too familiar with the brand, just from what you've told me, I really commend them for going so hard in the paint, because I imagine they knew they were going to be polarizing. And I often think the best brands are polarizing. It's you have to be willing to often offend some people, or at least at a minimum not entice some people, or maybe people don't get you. If you really want to speak to an audience that will absolutely 100% have your back, get you, be on board, be ride or die, like if you come out the gate with something strong, then the right people will gravitate to you. Not everyone, but the right people. And so I think it's really cool that they, you know, I don't know how offensive or, you know, that is to the masses, but if they seem to be, it seems to be working really well with their target demographic, all power to them.
Well, you know, I recently also learned that I'm going to blank on the exact name, but the dating site Just Farmers, it was one of the fastest growing in the dating site world. Who knew?
Yeah.
What brands do you find that are successful, that are polarizing? Do you have some examples that people could look to as a shining star?
I'll give one example of a brand that, it's not the whole brand, but it's a part of the brand. The brand, well, two people come to mind. So one is Wendy's Twitter presence. It's a very savage approach to personality. They're very direct. They're very bold. They're very no BS. People are either highly offended by the way they engage on Twitter, or they are obsessed and they follow everything they talk about. Also, Moon Pie is pretty funny too. They're kind of in that camp of people with a funny Twitter presence. They're also like a food brand. But Wendy's is, they're ruthless, but in a very fun, cheeky way. And the way they engage with other brands, they're ribbing other brands, they're teasing them, they poke fun at them. But, you know, again, that's a very polarizing approach, but it's gotten them a lot of notoriety and notice on social media, and people tend to be really, they tend to be into it. The other brand that I think has done well in terms of just being polarizing is Finks. They are a female-centric brand. They, for menstruation and incontinence, and they have been able to really take some of those more sensitive topics and approach them in a very direct, lighthearted way. And they know exactly who their consumer is. They know exactly who their demographic of women are. And they have a very bold, strong, punchy, almost borderline, super edgy tone. And it works really well, but I'm sure it's not palatable for everyone. But I'm a fan. But that's another one that just jumps out at me.
You know, speaking of sensitive topics, you know, financial literacy has fallen completely flat in terms of its success, in terms of its uptake. And there's stats that 87% of Americans are actually either very concerned, or it's their number one concern that they're going to run out of money. Right? Mm-hmm. It cuts across all of the wealth spectrum, that even people who have plenty of money are very concerned about that. It makes me wonder if there isn't a place for that human relatable piece of it to really engage a consumer in thinking about their finances, because it is scary, right? And so, you know, I think about what you just described in humanizing, and, you know, as a man only kind of know, having been surrounded by, you know, females in my life for so long, but this idea of, you know, this dark, dirty topic, you know, called menstruation, and for you know, others in incontinence, you know, bringing some humor to it is a way to maybe open the veil. Mm-hmm. So how do you do that, right, without ending up in the chase camp of, you know, coming across as snarky or unrelatable? How do you find that right balance of human?
Yeah, well, I, first of all, what I'm a big believer in is you can make something lighthearted without making light of it. And we've worked with a lot of different industries. We've worked with folks in the fertility industry, private investigator who works at exonerating wrongly convicted people. We've worked in IT space. We've worked in like all sorts of spaces that are generally can be very complex, can be very heavy, can be very shame-filled, whatever those things are. I think the beauty of fun and humor, and again, like we see it as such a broad tone, it's basically for us like something that is surprising and delightful, right? That's kind of the two elements that we think make up a really good brand and a really good, like strong campaign. But you know, what fun and humor do is they make the mundane entertaining. They make the controversial approachable. They make the complex digestible. And that really allows your brand to be unforgettable and be accessible and be relatable. I think when it comes to developing the right, you know, tone for you, I think you have to take into consideration all of those elements of your not only your industry, you have to understand the parts of your industry that people are maybe what are the pain points in the industry? What are the things your customer fears? What is the worst case scenario someone can say about you? You have to consider all of those dark sides of what could go wrong with humor, and you have to account for it. Doesn't mean you should water down your brand on account of it, but you should definitely be mindful and take all of that into consideration, because you don't want to offend half of your consumer base. That isn't good branding or marketing. You should appeal to most people, but you can also, again, appeal to most people and still be very punchy and still be very different and still be very fresh. You just have to be just an empathetic, considerate human being in the process, I think, is part of it. And that's, you know, that's the fun part of what we get to do.
I love your advice around don't water it down. The way to get there isn't to water it down. Mm-hmm. If a bank wants to start employing humor, what advice would you give them in terms of the baby steps? I loved your empathy. I love the knowing what you stand for and consistency. What else would you put out there for our listeners?
Yeah, and I think like if that's a bank being such a huge institution, and there's just so many different channels and there's so many different places to reach out to your consumer. I mean, God, you can start with something very simple. Maybe it's around a holiday, there's some campaign that you do. You know, it's very cliche, but maybe it's April Fools, or maybe it's the holiday season. You do something that's very campaign style, so it's a one-off, and it allows you to really test your market. How does this land? How do people receive it? Or maybe you start to test it out a little bit in a social platform. Maybe it's your Instagram becomes a place you start to infuse more personality, or maybe it's your Twitter. Not snarky and not the, I guess not the Chase way, but maybe there's a way you can infuse some more personality there. So I think that there's like these small micro places you can start to test it out, and you can flex different elements of your personality and try to speak to different, you know, parts of your consumer base, as opposed to just doing a big overhaul if it maybe is too big of a feat, you know, at a big institution.
Yeah, I think that is great advice in terms of their ability to start testing. So thank you, Allie, for joining us. I was going to end if we hadn't run out of time already to say something funny, but you escaped by the bell here.
So
thanks
thank
for
God.
Joining us. If people want to find you, where should they look for the Obedient Agency?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. And you can find me at obedientagency.com.
Fantastic. Thank you. After the break, we will be back with Nick and talking about what N26 is doing in the U.S.
The Voice America Live Events channel is here now to showcase your corporate, individual, or organization's live event. Visit voiceamerica.com/live events to see all of our past live events and find out more. Whether it's a multi-day conference, special speaker, or single-day event, we've got everything to make your event a success. We can do a few hours or a few days. For more information about taking your event to the next level, call Jeff Spinard at 480-294-6000. 4864-17 or email info@voiceamerica.com. Again, that's Jeff Spinard at 480-294-6417 or send us an email to info@voiceamerica.com. Voice America is where you are and where you want to be. Join us around the globe as we broadcast live from some of the most interesting events available. Don't forget to view all our live events, including on-demand access to past events that you may have missed, by visiting voiceamerica.com/live events.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag Breaking Banks. Now, back to the program.
Nick, thanks for joining us today. And, you know, in the first half of the show, Allie and I were talking about connectivity and how do you make that emotional connection with customers. And in her case, they use humor to do that. When you're an online-only bank, how do you build a connection with someone who, you know, banks talk all the time about their relationship with their customer, but in your case, you're never actually probably going to meet your customers.
Yeah. Hey, Jason, it's good to be on the show. Nick Kopp from USCO for N26. We're sort of a challenger bank, a mobile-first bank that was started in Europe, have 3.5 million customers there, and actually just launched our Visa debit card and checking account app via the Access Partner Bank here in the U.S. So very excited to be on the show. Happy to talk a little bit about sort of how we connect to our customers. So when you say that you probably never meet your customers, that's actually not correct. I think what we try and do at N26, despite being a mobile-first bank and, again, the primary way to interact with our customers on a day-to-day basis is not at all, because they can get everything that they need in their mobile phones. That's sort of intuitively designed and very clear also to people that may not be finance experts. So I think that's definitely one thing that we're doing quite well. We're also having a customer service that supports at all times of the day. So that's two ways of sort of making sure our customers get what they need. And then actually in the development of our products, as we built our app in the past in Europe, but are still continuing to build also here in the US, we actually talk a lot to our customers. So we have ways of connecting with them through either, number one, we have rounds where we invite them, our customers into the office, ask them for their feedback on our app, and work with them on also new features, show them the features, ask whether they like it or not, and get their feedback. So I think that's one way of connecting with our customers. And another way of doing that is also via email and phone calls, so remotely, not necessarily in person, to, again, get feedback from them, ask them what we should be building and why, what they're excited about. And that's a key way, I think, for us at N26 to actually engage personally with our customer base.
How often do you reach out to customers? And do you reach out to the same customers? Like, have you developed, you know, this certain base that you go to in terms of an ongoing relationship, or are these randomly selected customers?
Yeah, that's a good question. We actually do both. So we have a little bit of a power fan base of really loyal followers of N26 that have groups and sort of meet regularly, also actually without us to talk about N26 banking in general. And we work a lot with these people, invite them into the office and work with that fan base to basically improve our product because they know it quite well and really develop these new killer features that will excite them. So that's definitely one angle. But if you only do that, you get biased in your strategy. And so what we also do, we do select random samples of our customer base and either send them questionnaires, call them, or also invite them to the office more broadly, people that may not interact with us as frequently. Even people that may have stopped using us, we engage with them and ask them around the reasons why, and sort of try and get feedback and improve that way. So that's definitely one way of getting a little bit out of that skewed power fan base customer data set. And then the third thing is that I would say is very important as you're building out a mobile first consumer product, frankly, in any industry, but especially in banking, is also to speak to people that are actually not your customers yet, because that's where majority of the growth lies. And that's where I think we can wow the most customers. And these customers are people that don't use N26 yet and are maybe still with incumbents and traditional banks. And we reach out to them as well through different formats and forums and source basically input from a group of prospective customers, hopefully, or people that don't use or know N26 yet.
So, you know, back in 2008 when, you know, my company, Perk Street, and Simple were launching, and Movin was coming about just shortly after, being a online-only, digital-first was novel. But, you know, a decade later, there's some pretty good bank apps out there. How do you actually deliver enough value to get those customers to switch? Because especially in the U.S., you know this, changing your financial institution is actually quite difficult. So how do you deliver that value to get people to move over?
Yeah, and that's obviously something that I think about every day as we're building out our platform and customer base here in the U.S. So I think, first of all, I may challenge a little bit whether mobile banking or digital-only banking is as pronounced yet here in the U.S. As it should be. Because when I speak to, again, prospective customers that actually don't know N26 yet, when I look in my my own circle of friends and when I do my research, I actually see a large part of consumers in today's day and age in the United States that still go visit branches to do some of their banking, or alternatively, do online banking, and they have the app from incumbent bank X, and have the mobile and have the website from incumbent bank Y, but they're actually very frustrated with the experience. And so I think some of that relates to the fact that some of these more traditional players and incumbent banks have a lot of legacy IT systems that are hard to adapt and adjust to the most sort of to the very fast moving consumer app world. And I think what we're doing at 26, and I think we're doing it quite well, we actually create features and provide value to customers that would not be as easy to provide for traditional players. So for example, we have a way to sign up for your account in 5 minutes on your mobile phone. I would not, while maybe some other players have also fast signups, I think majority of people, when they sign up for a bank account, need to go visit a branch, fill in paperwork, or call people, and it's not as instantaneous as it is with N26. Another example of a feature I think that would be, or will be, I think, wowing customers here in the U.S. because it really has taken off very radically in Europe, is a feature that we've developed called Spaces, which is a way to create instant real-time sub-accounts on your phone. And you can literally swipe money back and forth on your phone to save for certain goals that you have. And again, that sort of feature is enabled by our backend that we've built ourselves at N26. That's fully real-time and instant. And with a lot of the traditional banks, when I use their sub-account features and look at what they do, it still takes 2 days for money to move around, even though it's within the same bank. Or it does take additional paperwork to fill in, for example, to create that sub-account. So I would say there's still room for improvement, significant room for improvement in the current mobile offerings in the U.S. versus the more traditional players and what people currently use.
Are there any features that you developed that you're just shocked how important they are to your customers when you engage with them? Things that you didn't think were going to be so significant that your customers turned around and told you, just like, no, wow, this is really important to me, that kind of surprised you?
Yeah, there were definitely a few things. I think though the two features I mentioned had very strong resonance also with the U.S. customer base. We have 100,000 people on the wait list right now, and we're onboarding customers every day. And the early feedback that we're getting is like, wow, that was so easy to sign up. And amazing. I can now create like Spaces sub accounts on my phone in real time. So that's that tangible feedback we're getting from that early customer base, but also simple things, which really, frankly, surprised me, such as instant notifications and giving you transaction details in real time on your phone is something that people really appreciate about N26 here in the U.S., that you would argue almost as table stakes, but really getting that transaction notification in real time, not delayed by a couple of seconds or a minute, but in that millisecond that your card is in the point of sale terminal, with all the details attached to it. Where did you make the transaction? What is the merchant's name? If it was abroad, like what was the FX or for currency exchange rate? Can categorize and pack these transactions all in real time. This sort of instant control of your spending that we give to customers is also something that actually surprised me a little bit of how prominently it will be received by our US customer base here.
I'm curious, if you look across the other regions you've launched, are there different things that are really engaging, connecting it geographically with people that it surprises you, or is it a pretty consistent set of demands your customers are asking of you?
Yeah, that's a good question. And as we're live in 24 European markets, we obviously spent some time in sort of analyzing the similarities and also differences between markets. What I actually found interesting, sort of rolling out N26 throughout Europe, so I was based in Europe before, helped business built the business there, is that the actual differences between markets is not as pronounced as one would expect. Obviously, there's always like local intricacies around like how to fund your account or how to, what is another one? Yeah, how to fund your account is a good one, I think, or how you do your reporting in the background to tax authorities that we as N26, as a bank in Europe, need to take into consideration on how customers can do certain actions in the local markets. But the overarching themes such as, I want a fast and easy way to sign up for an account. I want an instant way to interact with my bank. I want to pay no to little fees. These are very universal character traits of our customers in Europe, and actually why people love us so much. And that's why at N26, we're now, our vision has over the years also grown much larger, actually, to building a global retail a banking institution that sort of offers the services that delight our customers in Europe. We have very strong early signs here in the U.S. And bring that experience also to customers worldwide. So one of the next markets that we're looking at launching and that we've announced that we will go into is Brazil. That also has huge potential there. And the hypothesis that we have at N26 and the strategy that we're executing on is really that actually banking needs in today's day and age are really uniform across geographies and countries, because the generation that uses mobile first banking is so used to using Netflix, Uber, Spotify. All these are global brands, global apps, super good customer and consumer experiences, and the same customer experiences globally, that we think the same will also be true for banking, and hence we're so adamant about sort of executing on that strategy and frankly also our mission of building a bank that the world loves to use. And so from that perspective, while there is significant, there's some not significant differences, yeah, significant on a regulatory operational reporting side between the countries, the overall customer experience and what customers want is actually more uniform across geographies than what you would expect.
Now, you'd mentioned Spotify, and I think there's something interesting mm-hmm. to pull out, because one of the things that also really distinguishes N26 is that you actually do have a freemium, a Spotify-like business model. Can you tell us a little bit more mm-hmm. about that?
Yeah. So we have a business model where the base account at N26, our standard account, is largely free of charge. So that is very attractive to customers who want free banking, and is one of the key value propositions, for example, that we have in Europe, that you can use and do banking on your mobile phone for free. Same here in the US, you can sign up for an account at no cost. There's no monthly fees or minimum account balances that are required, et cetera. So I think that's definitely an important value proposition to a large part of our customer segment in Europe and the US. What we've then built on top is a freemium model where for certain additional services, such as in Europe, more free ATMs, or a different type of card that looks different. We have started introducing two additional tiers in Europe. So we have a base tier that's free in Europe. Then we have a tier called N26U. That is sort of our middle premium tier. And then we have a super premium tier that's N26 Metal. And the two upper tiers are paid for by our customers. We will introduce a similar model here in the US, where we'll have that base account that is free to sign up for. But we're also introducing in the next couple of weeks, we are introducing Metal, which is our super premium tier, where, for example, in Metal, you will get a Metal card that is very well designed with additional perks, benefits on top of that. And so that sort of tier is something that people are willing to pay for because they get more service. And that model, I think we're pioneering actually within financial services or banking, but has been very successful so far. And it's also part of our revenue driver, for example, in Europe.
I mean, I love that you're not just innovating at the experience level, but you're really innovating at the business model level as well. Can you tell us a little bit more, in addition to global domination, where are some of the other areas that N26 is focusing its innovation to really kind of change the face of financial services?
Yeah, we are definitely, I mean, customer experience and improving that customer experience is definitely what made N26 so successful to date. And I think we'll also carry success into the future because we do think there is ample room for improvement on the mobile side, on the transparency side for customers and sort of improving the way people bank. But we also invest a fair bit of time and energy into enabling that customer experience on the back end. So what does that mean specifically? We, for example, built our whole system and core banking software, the way we book transactions and the way we process transactions, we all built that in-house. We are also using AI, for example, on detecting fraud and sort of preventing fraud for our customers and providing a superior experience and more safety and security for our customers that way. And we're also improving customer service and the way customer service is done, for example, we've built our own chatbot that helps you faster and get to the bottom of your questions faster if you call in. And these are just examples on the more infrastructure side, how we enable the best customer experience, but not just through like innovation on the front end, but actually innovation on the back end to then enable best service to our customers.
Yeah, that innovation on the back end is often overlooked. It's, you know, not necessarily the sexiest, but you know, you already called out that the instantaneous creation of sub-accounts, you would think that would be an easy thing to do, but for most banks stuck on legacy cores, you know, they're not built to enable something like that, and your mm-hmm. back-end architecture is actually severely limiting what you can do on the front end. Curious along those lines, when you think about the new technologies coming about, what excites you most and what do you think is actually a little overhyped?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I think twofold. I think number one, I think a technology that will really fundamentally change the way we bank and build banking products is artificial intelligence. There is a lot of buzz and chatter around it, and I think the execution is still underway, but I do see a world in the next 5 to 10 years where it's possible for a institution like N26 to use the data that we have on customers in a customer-friendly way to customize banking experiences to an extent where our millions of customers on the platform will actually have customized and individualized experiences and transaction feeds of how they interact with us and how they get information on their finances. And I think that's definitely one large trend that I see unfolding and that I think newer tech-enabled fintechs or banking institutions can really take advantage of. And I think it's a technology, again, that will fundamentally change the way we sort of provide customer experience. The other technology that I think is also going to be very fundamental on the infrastructure side, but where I think on the customer application side has not progressed as mainstream as it hopefully will in the future, but as people often talk about it, is blockchain. So I do think while enabling transactions through blockchain, changing ledgers, and especially there's a few use cases for international transaction, obviously Facebook introducing the Libra, I think these are really good advances in the right directions. But I think for mainstream customer adoption, even though we talk a lot about Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies, but I think for mainstream customer adoption, actually blockchain hasn't, the technology hasn't changed as much as we often talk about in the media. But I think that will change also in the future. But right now, I think is actually, to use your terminology, a little bit overhyped. But again, I hope to see a change in the future.
Yeah, I agree with you that, you know, I think AI kind of crept up on us, the speed with which it's starting to have an impact. And you make such an important point that while you might not have that in-person branch relationship with your customers through AI and digital delivery that allows you to highly customize it, you actually deliver a more personalized, maybe not as personable in the sense of it's not someone reaching out and shaking your hand or offering you a cup of coffee, but you're actually, you know, able to really personalize that in a way that is powerful for that individual.
Yeah, I agree. And I think also with today's especially millennial generation, that personable touch point that you're describing can be important at times. And I think it's important to provide through, for example, customer service or customer service chat. But I think majority of us millennials actually prefer to have a customized experience on their smartphones. That's very low investment in terms of time on their end, but still gives you the feeling that someone looks after you. And I think that's sort of the mix that a lot of successful players in the future, I think, will be able to strike. I have the technology to enable the customized experience from a tech side, especially using AI, but not necessarily or only providing the personable experience when the customer really wants. And I think that's the key mix in terms of being successful in the future.
Well, you know, the one thing I'll push back on is I don't think it's just millennials that want that. You know, in fact, as you get older, your financial life tends to get a lot more complex and look a lot more unique based on the individual, based on you have kids and mortgages and home equity loans and 529 plans. The idea that my bank actually knows and remembers that versus that human who continues to offer me the same account that I've said no to 10 times before, I think that becomes, it isn't just millennials. I think it is something that will, you know, start when you're younger and you want it personalized, but it gets more and more important and more valuable as your financial life gets more complex.
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay.
Thank you, Nick Kopp, for joining us. CEO for the United States launch of N26, coming to you soon. Nick, if people want to join the waiting list, you mentioned there's already 100,000 people. If they want to be 100,001, where should they go sign up?
Go to n26.com. You can sign yourself up. There's a button on there that says sign up for an account. Put yourself on the wait list. And we are inviting people from that wait list, have already begun for the last 2 weeks. And we'll sign up people on a first come, first serve basis. So your account should be ready in the next couple of weeks.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Jason. Bye-bye.
That is all for this week. Special thanks to Ali Lefevre, the co-founder of Obedient Agency, the humor marketer, and Nick Kopp, the CEO of the United States branch of N26, the juggernaut German challenger bank. We always appreciate your comments, suggestions, and questions. You can find us on Twitter at BreakingBanks1, or you can email us at info@provoke.fm. Let us know if you're interested in sponsoring a show or a segment. Our sponsors make the show possible and often provide some of the most interesting content. Now, if you like the show and want to support us in your own way, take a minute, give us a 5-star rating on your favorite podcast platform and leave us a review. It really helps new listeners find the show and understand why what we do is valuable. Now, if you still want more, you can download and listen to any of more than 300 shows from Breaking Banks and our other shows like FinTech 5, Serial Entrepreneur, Breaking Banks Asia Pacific with Simon Spencer, all at provoke.fm. That's it for this week. We'll see you again next week for more Breaking Banks.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time for more of the latest in fintech news.